audio. You can access the whole history of the meetings. And now we've set it up so that the planning board meetings say planning board meetings versus village board meeting. So it's a little easier to see. And we're streaming.
And then you gotta make it for Tom, right?
Yeah.
We ready, Deb?
Yeah, sorry.
We're ready?
We are ready, yeah.
You got the floor, Brandy.
Okay, good evening, everyone. How's everybody doing?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing okay.
What is your name?
I'm Brandy Nelson. I am a project manager with Tye and Bond. We're consulting engineers. And I'm here with the team at Clover Reach, and we are here for the proposed Woods subdivision. We do have some information that we wanted to bring you in response to last meeting's request for visual resource assessment. So we'll go through that. And then I see you all have your colored plans in front of you. So I'd like to introduce a possible modification to the property line. And Andrew can get into a little bit more of the details, but which would you like to do first? They're both going to get us to the same endpoint ultimately.
Well, let's catch up first. Why don't you do what we needed from last meeting?
Okay, all right, great. So I'm going to hand out, here, just so you guys can see that. And I've got a big scale one that I'll put up on the board there in just 1 minute. So at the last meeting, there was a request for us to do a visual assessment of what. There was a request for us to do an assessment of the potential visual impacts of the development. This one I'll introduce. To do a visual rendering of what the development will look like from the north side of Summit Lake where the park is, looking southward onto the hillside. All right. So I just want to explain for a moment the process that we undertake to produce these visual renderings. So we've had a survey done of the property, and from that survey, we're able to build a three-dimensional terrain model. So we can basically, in the computer, model the topography of the land. And then in our plan view, I actually want to flip back to that for a second. So we've given you guys these plans that show how we're going to grade the land, where the houses are going to sit, where the driveways are going to sit. So we are able to model that in three dimension, and then we take photos from the vantage point of the viewer, and we apply that photo over the terrain model so that you're seeing where the trees are and where the lake edge is. And in this case, it's easy to do that because it's a very distinct lake edge that you can match up to. And then we can render in the, build what's called a wireframe model in the three dimensions and render in each individual house site at the location where it is shown on this plan in three dimensions. So that's the first image that you all have. So So we took this plan showing these hub sites and the grading for the roadway and the grading for the driveway. And then we took our image from the north side of the lake, looking southward into the development area. And you can see, and it's subtle, the houses located up in the woods. We have a buffer of over 300 feet of woods between the lake edge and where the houses are going to be, which provides a lot of screening. And so are you all able to see that in the small version that I gave you? You can see the rooftops?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so they're basically through here. We'll start on the east side. There's one here, 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 here. And they go all the way to the west side over here. On the second sheet that I provided you, that's the without the houses. So that's the existing condition as it stands now. And then in the third graphic that I provided to you, we actually were up here last week right after it snowed. And we noticed, you know, we were looking at the houses that are on Summit Street now from that same vantage point. You can see them pretty readily. I couldn't get a wide enough lens to get the whole of Summit Street all the way to the east side of our development, but I just wanted to give you a sense of, like, you know what's out there now, you can see it now.
So that's existing.
That's existing, that's what's on Summit Street.
I would just point out one thing, which is in the far corner over here of the drawing, this is actually a house that pre-existed in the photograph, right?
Right.
This is a yellow, almost white, but yellow house up in the woods, and that house is half as far back as any of the houses that we'll be building. So you can see what a brightly colored house looks like through half as much woods. And ours is rendered the way it is because we're planning to do black roofs and dark house colors. So that's why it's very faint.
Right, and so I did want to make sure that you guys are aware of that. The proposal would be not to have brightly colored houses or light colored houses, but earth tone tans and grays and natural wood. And then dark roofs, not silver metal roofs or anything like that. So that is, in summary, the visual assessment. Also, following our previous meeting.
Do you want to walk them through that section?
Oh, sure.
So
yeah, absolutely.
Understand, like, the tree.
I should do that. You're right. The other thing we wanted to do, just to help illustrate how the visual rendering is created, was we provided a line of sight analysis. So that's like a one person's point of view. And so if that person is standing on the north side of the lake here, and they're looking up the hillside, the landscape rises up. And so we wanted to see, in relationship to the wooded hillside, where the houses would be and whether or not the trees and the buffer that's created from the lake edge to the back of the northernmost property line would interrupt someone's line of sight. So these dashed lines over here are your line of sight to the houses that are lower on the hillside and the houses that are higher on the hillside. These trees are scaled in at 40 feet, which is an average height for a maple tree. There are some trees out there that are taller than that, but we wanted to be fairly conservative. And so you can see that if you're on the north side of the lake, looking across the lake, your line of sight is interrupted, whether you're looking at the lower houses or the upper houses. And so having that deep buffer between the lake edge and where the lots start provides a great deal of screening. It doesn't completely make you not see that there are houses there, but it provides a great deal of screening so that it's not obvious in the landscape.
And the section that we chose, it goes through houses 14 and 6 on the plan, which are kind of average for the lower edge and average for the upper homes. And then in the distance here, we put lot 12, which is the closest house to the lake. So you can see just how much buffer there is between the forest edge and the closest house.
So this view is like you're in an airplane looking down. You see the lake. And you can see how much wooded buffer is there, and then how deep the backyards are and where the houses are. So we have the houses pulled up close to the road. There will obviously be some clearing and tree removal associated with the roadway installation. One thing George had noted in his comment letter last time was that we had designed this with a 2-on-1 side slope, so a steeper side slope for our road cut. In doing so, trying to preserve as much of the tree cover as possible and keep the grading footprint as small as possible. And to mitigate that steeper slope, we are proposing to use a more robust form of erosion control, which is a mat that you roll out when you have those areas, rather than just letting it be seeded and wait for the seed to come in. So when you have a steeper slope, you'll use a more aggressive form of erosion control to help manage that slope. All right. Okay. We have also been in contact with both the fire department and Mr. Sider, DPW. We've received a few comments from Mr. Sider. I think for the most part, those comments are easily addressed, and there's a few things we need to follow up with him on. And we'll be sure to do that ahead of the next meeting. The fire department letter we provided in your packet, and there was no issues identified by Mr. Beaumont, or Chief Beaumont. And so you guys have that for your record as well. In addition, we had reached out to SHPO, and I don't think at the last meeting I mentioned that in any great detail, but State Historic Preservation Office, as you guys know, the village is pursuing a historic district designation for, I think, almost all of the village. I'm not sure if it's 100% of the village, but a significant portion, including the properties that are on Summit Street. And so this parcel, you know, obviously accesses onto Summit Street and then extends eastward beyond Summit Street. Right now, the historic district line is like the back of all the houses that are on Summit Street. And so we would naturally abut the historic district once it's formed. So we had contacted SHPO. We had provided them with the plans, and they had some questions about clearing and screening and where the houses are in relationship to the historic district. They have provided us, and we've submitted to you guys, and it was in our packet from our February submission, a letter that says there's no effect as far as they're concerned on the historic district, but they would like to see the house style that's being proposed. So we have not yet shared the visual rendering information with them. We just finished that, but we will get that over to them. And if they can send us a revised letter, that would be great. I'd like your record to have that. But you guys are seeing the visual impact materials first.
So the notes that I sent you from Dave Sider.
Yes, sir.
You guys are going to address that with him?
Yes, sir. Yeah, and some of them I think we have addressed. I just need to sit down with him and make sure that we're looking at the same part of the plan.
Okay.
Four of the six items on that we were either already planning to do or were totally fine with, and then there were two other ones we were just going to discuss with them.
Okay.
That's what I had on my list. I didn't know, George, if you had anything else. Okay. Can we talk about the possible lot change, lot configuration change? Okay. So that is the plan that we provided to you last week with the purple and the blue. I hope no one's colorblind because I'm never sure if I'm showing colors right. But the situation is this. The shape of the parcel that we're proposing to subdivide was created at the time of a 57 lot subdivision back in 2007. And at that time, the configuration of all those lots made up the outbounds of what is the parcel that Clover Reach now owns. And at that time, the land between the development and the lake was given over to the town as, or to the village as conservation land. And so it's like, there was not really, I wasn't there. I don't know if any of you were on the board at that time, but.
They were.
I don't know what the thought process was as far as like, you know, was the lake a factor in wanting to be protected, and that's why the conservation land was created? You know, Rob, you may have been there, you may.
Yeah, in 1991, when it was the Burvey subdivision, the larger one, it was a condition of their approval. The village adopted zoning, which changed it from a quarter acre to half acre, and they had a vested right to the subdivision at the time. So the compromise was the village adopted a conservation easement area over the lands. And that was there in the 2007 subdivision. And what happened was, is there was a modification of the conservation easement to allow the then stormwater detention ponds to go in, and that was processed through the village board. That was challenged in the court system, and the determination was upheld. Later on in the 2007 development, it got better in that the developer offered not only to have land subject to a conservation easement that restricted cutting and development and things, he agreed to actually donate the land in fee title ownership to the village. So the village then became the owner of the conservation easement lands. All the lands that we're proposing here today, even with a minor adjustment as you're proposing, are still subject to a conservation easement that protects that land in the buffer area from the reservoir. So that's kind of the lay of the land on that. Pardon the pun.
Okay, thank you. I'm so glad you're here for continuity.
I've lived it a long time. So.
I didn't realize it was so long. Okay, so the current property line, I apologize, I didn't take a highlighter and highlight this, but the current property line that Clover Reach owns is this funny shape piece like this. And I don't know if you want to step in at some moment, but Andrew was meeting with the village about the trail network and protecting the lake and what we want to do to try and help enhance the lake protections. And, you know, it was observed that the closest distance of Clover Reach's property to the lake is about 150 feet because of this sort of odd-shaped parcel. And that having a more consistent buffer and more room for trail access at the north end might be beneficial. And so the idea was put out there to possibly make an exchange of land, so like a one-for-one swap, where Clover Reach could donate some land that would provide for areas that have shallow buffers to have deeper lake buffers. And conversely, land would be exchanged to, basically just to swap out a one-for-one, but just to deepen a couple of the lots here and make them a little bit more of a uniform size.
Yeah.
Did you want to add more to that?
Talk more to that.
Yes.
It was actually something that came up in our early public meetings where, you know, this distance to the lake here is essentially like the conservation buffer, like they brought that.
Andrew, you're blocking it for us.
Sorry. This distance of the lake here, we'll go over again.
No, I know, but you're standing right in front of it.
This distance here was basically just the conservation buffer. And, you know, what we found was like, we have these kind of irregular lot shapes that were pushing in on that. And in one of the early meetings, someone asked like, well, could you resize that so that we get a more consistent conservation area instead of having these weird little pinch points for moving through there. And there were two areas that were signaled, one early on, which was here where it's the closest, and then the other one is the back of this larger lot. We had like a really, on our last proposal, we had this really large lot back here, and it just doesn't need to go that far. We ended up with these three larger lots back here because we didn't want to carry the road further. There was like, you know, it just would have made a lot more roadway and wasn't necessarily going to give us like more lots. Or we just didn't want to go with that density. Like we liked the 16 from early on. So we kept the road shorter, less grading, less clearing. It's all like intention of the project. But we liked this idea of adjusting this to create a more consistent conservation area. Early on, we were advised by council, both the village's council and our council, that Because this was a, I don't want to say, kind of a distressed property, because there had been so much contention over past developments that it was likely we would face legal challenge at some point, either within or after the process. So they were suggesting, like, do the lot line adjustment later. But then when we recently met and showed a sketch of what we were considering for the lot line adjustment, it was affecting many lots along this side. So they said, due to the comprehensive nature of that adjustment, it would be better to actually put it in the process and do it now, so it doesn't look like there's some kind of segmentation or something like that. So it's the exact same number of lots. What actually the houses that are on the grading plan that we gave before, the house locations are exactly the same, the driveway locations are the same, road frontages are the same.
It doesn't change the engineered part of the plan with right. the roadway, the utilities, or the house sites at all. It's merely the parcel size for the downhill lots.
Right. All we did was like tilt some lines. The other benefit that we were able to create with that is that the village's zone, I guess in the subdivision rules for the village, you're only allowed a 10% area of inundation or wetland on a per lot basis, and we had three lots that were over the 10%. By adding on this area on the back of those lots, we were able to bring one lot below the 10%, and the other two lots would require a minor area of the wetland to be filled in to get us below the 10% threshold. So it allows us to keep much more of the wetland than would have been required by village rules to get our approval as of right, and to keep the wetlands continuous so that they're intact. So we'd be filling in just a few little like corners of the wetland. So it seemed like there were myriad like crossover benefits to asking for the lot line adjustment, and that now was the appropriate time. So that's why we're bringing it forward.
I know there's a lot of information to take in, but do you have any questions? I didn't run through the calculation, but it's we tried to match one for one. There'd be a slight square footage benefit to the village, but it's approximately 1.2 acres of land that would be exchanged between the two.
Rob, do you want to talk to them about the process of having the village do that, if they're
interested? I mean, you're contemplating approving a subdivision, and that's the setting and alteration of lines upon the property. This can be folded into that as an adjustment. They're setting the lines as the lots that they want configured, and basically, if you approve it in the depiction that they have, then later on they'd actually do the deed exchange with the village for those one-for-one parcels, the one-for-one for one areas. And I think they had a discussion with the village board, and the village board would like to keep the established trails as best they can. And this, if you look at the top piece, the top pink piece up there, that would assist in having that happen. That's closer to Mike Johnston's property. And as they said, the pinch point where the buffer's pretty small there, that would expand that as well. So it seems beneficial to everyone, as they've indicated.
And it doesn't change the location of the houses or any of the engineering involved?
Not at all. All of this is exactly the same. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It does slightly change the dimensions on some of the lots. So we did update the summary table of the lots, but all would meet the minimum half acre lot size requirement and the minimum frontage requirement still.
Yeah. And yeah, actually, since we took it off the bigger lots, we're ending up, it ends up that lot 10 here is 3 acres, this is just over 2, this is just over 1, and these 4 lots then average like 0.85 acres. I think our average lot size is like 0.94 acres, so we're almost double what's required by the zoning. But yeah, it basically made bigger lots out of some of the smaller lots and shrunk down the ones that were really big.
And just to be plain, the purple is what Clover Reach would exchange for the blue. So mm-hmm. the blue would come into Clover Reach and the purple would go
so again,
out
it's a one
to the
one.
Village. It's a one-to-one swap, yes, sir.
So the other thing I wanted to do is highlight, because this was the other conversation that's in play, the paths connecting the conservation areas. If there's other questions on that, I can pause, but I was gonna just show you that. So the paths connecting the conservation areas are pretty much what we proposed from the beginning. There was a request by members of the village board to consider putting a path along this long border. You know, we decided that, you know, early on in our thinking, we looked at the existing connectivity of, you know, unofficial like trails going through the private parcel. So those trails were created in different ways and for different purposes. But essentially, there was a trail that makes kind of a loop with the Chestnut Court, with the Joshua Essig Trail that came into the corner of the property here. It's highlighted in light gray where it comes in right now. That trail actually followed one of the roadbeds that was carved from the earliest subdivision, and then came back out onto Overlook Court. So that was you know, basically just following that roadbed for most of it. So there was another section, which I'm now understanding is what the board members were referring to as the Joshua Essig Trail, which followed another roadbed that came down pretty much to the center of this long arm on the north side, and then continued to the dock up here. So when we were first looking at it, you know, we did surveys at our community meetings that we held prior to the planning board experience. And the one thing that we found was that regardless of how long people had lived here or regardless of their opinions about whether there should be a subdivision or not, we asked questions about like, what would you like to see in the village? Like, what do you think would be improvements or you know, you would enjoy? And pretty ubiquitously, people said that they wanted access to the conservation area, that they wanted more hiking trails, bird watching, fishing. That was one of the most universal desires. So when we created this map of trails, we were trying to respect trails that we understood, even though they were, you know, not official trails or not technically legal trails. We still wanted to keep that connectivity. That was part of what encouraged us to make this conservation area in the center and in the road loop. But we also wanted to bring access to the majority of the village as quickly as possible. So originally we had two entrances. We had one here where this stormwater management area was, and then we had one further back, the further back one being the easiest way to connect the Joshua Essig Trail into the park. We ended up letting go of the stormwater management area one. This is land we intend to turn over to the village, and the village could look into creating that, but the slopes, there were like multiple factors here that made it really challenging. There's wetland, there are some drainage swales that are part of an existing drainage system that need to be maintained. And with the stormwater management area, this had really steep slopes, like it might require steps to actually get you to a trailhead in this area. So we had to let go of that access. But our opinion was that it would be better to get people into the conservation area sooner. You know, one suggestion was that these trails were unnecessary, that the Joshua Essig Trail going to the back here was like the critical trail. But if we were to have just a trail back here, that would require people to go up to Chestnut Court all the way around to be able to get into the park area. So for that reason, and because, you know, this would be a 750 foot long trail going along one of the largest, like longest lots, you would basically be walking, you know, through someone's yard. And if you look at the house layout, I think it's on the submission before this one, you would be walking pretty close to this house. So you know, while you still have a trail close to houses here, these are much smaller lots, the houses are much closer to the road, you would basically have much less time that you're spending like in, you know, people's yards before you get into the conservation area. So because of that, we're proposing to maintain the trail system that we originally proposed, and not to add an additional trail or divert other trails to go along this boundary here.
Andrew, you should mention that. That's just in terms of our subdivision. There's a neighboring piece of land right here that we don't own. That would probably make for, you know, a great path to go in there. So on a side note, we're in talks with this property owner to see if we can make some kind of arrangement to bring another leg this way. But in terms of our subdivision and this site plan, this is the trail system for that. And this, you know, that's outside of it.
But you're pursuing the other
one. Yeah, we're pursuing that for sure. Yeah. I just wanted to make that clear.
Some of the reason why this is a really unique location is because it's just off of the map here, but if you look at the tax maps, the New York Rail Trail, it's a section rail trail that they're strongly considering to work on soon, and this property here, if a slice of this could be obtained for the village, that would not only give the Joshua Essig Trail like a very woodsy connection into the conservation area, but that could also create access directly onto the rail trail from the village's conservation area.
And I'm sorry, your name is Andrew?
Andrew.
And what's your last name?
Personette, person E-T-T-E.
And what was the other gentleman's name?
Jock, J-O-C-K. Winch, W-I-N-C-H.
Thank you.
Junior.
So, given all of that, are there any further questions?
No, we're caught up on everything right now, right?
Yes, sir. I believe so.
Okay. Questions? Board? Anybody got any questions?
Yes, so what you're saying is the trail that they want up in this other piece of property, you have no control over having a trail because it would be through one of your lots.
I mean,
it would be through a neighbor.
Yeah, if you were to make a trail, it would be in your lot.
Yes, yeah.
And you really don't want to do that. We're trying to do this in somebody else's property.
Right, like all of our trails, we're creating buffer zones so that those trails can be public access, but still have, you know, not be right up or inside of someone's property line. Because of how thin and long this property is, this is also a stone wall along here, which, you know, it's not a stone wall like a stone wall, it's just like rubble laid out. So we would have to create a pretty decent sized easement to create a walking trail on there. What we're worried about is that someone who's buying the larger lot is looking for more privacy. We're gonna end up with like a 750 foot fence along a trail that's supposed to be a nature trail, or you're gonna just be walking through their yard with whatever accessory buildings, et cetera, they put in their yard. And so it would be taking, you know, one of our only larger, somewhat private lots and making it very public.
And the private owner that you're dealing with, I mean, just a little background, he didn't even know we owned that for a long time, right?
That is correct. Yeah,
that's correct.
It is the back corner of 160 acres. It's multiple lots, but it's 160 acres owned by one owner, that the access to his property is in Clavrick on Stevers Crossing, you know, like kind of way down the road. He has the rail trail running along his entire property. So yeah, we're hoping we could convince him to do a solid for the village one way or another and have access through there and access to the rail trail. We did speak with the people from the rail trail, and they said they are actually actively trying to figure out like what is their next move, that they kind of everything that they planned on already is like handed over to contractors and in the works, so they're trying to figure out what's their next planning move. And they said that this section of the rail trail from, I guess it'd be from Hillsdale to Philmont, was something very attractive to them to approach. The reason we reached out to them is we were seeing if it would make any sense to have that connect through the property, but because of the slopes on the property, they could never do it with the, they tie into federal funding and they have to have 1-2% grade like maximum on theirs, and we're 10-15% on the entire lot. So there's no way to bring the rail trail through our property, but they are still interested to bring it into Philmont, and they do have land where they can create a trailhead with parking or potentially bring it straight through to Main Street if they could work something out with Mr. Johnston.
Anyone else? Ozzy?
No, I don't have any other questions.
All right, Rick, you good?
Good.
Judy?
Yep.
Tom?
Yeah, I just have a few things, and maybe I'll just start with the photo presentation. Doing a photo presentation and photo simulations, that can be highly subjective. And I think that's a good way to describe this image. In other words, you can change the point of view depending on what you're trying to prove. So, and to try and bring the community in to the process, I think in lieu of doing a simulation, maybe, and to try and also help you work out this problem you're having with the trails, would be to do a 3D model that would include the north shore of the lake, and of course your development, and then you can throw laser beams across rather than just from one position. You can walk it along, throwing laser beams across, and when they hit a house, you'll know you can see it. If it doesn't hit it, you can't see it, and it makes it very clear. I mean, this is very unclear to me, and I'm used to looking at these things. So you might just want to consider it because it could help.
Are you talking about physical model?
Physical 3D model, yeah.
Yeah, so we don't normally do that anymore. Everything's mm-hmm. done digitally. If you guys wanted, for the public hearing, we could bring in the terrain model and present it on a screen, and you can rotate through it, and you can see it from all sorts of vantage points. I mean, we built a 3D model in the computer based on the plans and the survey that we have for the site. So,
yeah, I'm talking about a physical model.
Yeah, no, I mean, everything is done by computer now. So we right. have the model. I can certainly share that.
Oh, you have a physical model?
No. It's digital.
Yeah, no, I understand. So,
but that's not subjective. It is
right.
exactly what's out there. And I could bring that in and display it on a screen, and we could move through different vantage points so that you could see it from different angles.
Either that or an actual physical model. I think when you're bringing in the community, it makes a huge difference.
Physical model would be a really huge expense, I think.
Yeah.
When you're saying a physical model, are you talking about like taking that 3D and 3D printing it, or mm-hmm. actually like making little homes and putting it on a topography?
The homes are squares in the yeah. square foot in the height. It's not a big deal.
I definitely wouldn't be. I mean, I've built physical models for people, and it's a very time-based process. Like, I think that would cost us a lot of money to try to create that model.
You can send it to the file to a place in Ohio and get it back within a week. It does not cost nearly the amount that it used to cost when you did it by hand. If you could look into it, it's just a suggestion. If you find out it's not practical, then drop it.
Okay.
But I this is not satisfactory.
I think the thing about that picture to me, like our intention when we started out was to hide 16 homes in the woods. I think for me, the thing that's the most telling is that yellow house in the corner of that picture. That house has half as many trees, and it's bright, like white yellow, and it's hard to see in that picture. So we're gonna do dark houses that are twice as far back with twice as much tree. My feeling on that that representation was that it was too generous in terms of the visibility of the houses. I truly believe you won't see as, I know that's, it doesn't look like it's a great quality print, but you know, we could send a digital, or we probably already did send a digital file. If not, we can put that up on the village's website so you can see it. You know, I believe you will not see the houses at all, even in winter. And the other reason I say that is because going on the land, like we did a walk with a group. I think some of the people are here.
We're Julia, here, but we're not allowed to speak.
No, I know, but,
give us
but some of the people that were here like went on the walk with us, and we stood in the location where some of the houses are gonna be, and you could not even see the lake through the trees. And this was in the winter after.
Wait,
like,
I'd like to say something.
Sorry, it's not a public hearing.
Okay, well then he can't quote us.
Okay, well I'm not quoting, but at the public hearing we could discuss that more, but in my opinion that representation is subjectively far too generous to the visibility of the houses.
So you currently have a digital though, is that what you're saying?
We do have a
digital model that we could bring in and show to help, like that I think we can do, and that, you know, we'd be happy to do that.
So in your digital model, you can walk around and...
It's not virtual reality, so we're not gonna be able to put goggles on and like immerse ourselves in it, but we can display it on the screen and you can rotate the model and see it from a number of different vantage points. You can see where the tree clearing is going to be. So maybe it would give you a better sense of the scale and placement of the structures and the improvements on the land.
Mm-hmm.
I think the other thing I would want to point out is just that there isn't actually a requirement for us to hide the homes. That is something we're interested in doing, and that is something that we understand the village is interested to not see, or at least certain people from the village have expressed that they are interested to not see homes on the other side of the lake. And so we are, I believe, taking, we're going way above and beyond what is required to do that. So I'm happy to bring elements of the model that we have and try to help make it more clear like what's going to be there, but I don't, we already spent many thousands of dollars generating these visual surveys. I wouldn't really be interested to spend a lot more money to try to prove something that we don't really have to prove.
Okay, I'm not taking a stand of showing them or not showing them, or visible or not visible. I just want clarity on where they are and where you can see them from the different vantage points.
And Mr. Pano, is it helpful for you to have this section view?
That section is quite helpful, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, everybody perceives things differently. Some of us read plants and some of us read sections better, but I think this is a nice representation, and we can certainly, again, it's sort of an awkward size to like have as a handout because we're trying to do it in scale, horizontal and vertical, that is representative of what's out there. But it does show you like house height versus tree height versus limits of clearing.
Right.
I think the other thing it represents is that it's relatively parallel, the viewpoint that's afforded from Lake Drive relative to the location of houses, you know, with this one exception, which we highlight here. So being able to see it from different points along here doesn't really change what you're going to be able to see.
I don't quite agree with that, but good explanation. And then I just have a couple of points in the public versus private issues of the site. So this has more to do with urban planning rather than engineering. It's a bit more generalized. But this is a major project for Philmont. It probably hasn't seen this many dwellings erected since the late 19th century, early 20th, all at one time.
The subdivision up on the top.
That took years, yeah.
Yeah.
So aside from that, this is a big one. And but in addition to that, there's a lot of variance from both the zoning and from the comprehensive plan. So, and I just want to point out some of that variance, which then leads to community character and not being aligned with the existing community character. So the proposed road, it doesn't connect, it doesn't have an adjacency to the rest of the Summit Heights development. It does result in about a quarter mile loop with only one way to get out. So it has an unsatisfactory connection in terms of urban planning. It's an unsatisfactory connection to existing roads. So for example, House 5 wants to visit their neighbor that they can see up at the other Summit Heights project. The people in House 5, if they wanted to bring their children there, wanted to bring something to that house, but that's right behind them that they can see, they have to go all the way through the loop, back out to Woods Road, back out to Summit Street, and then re-enter through Overlook Court, and then eventually to their destination. That's not a good urban plan. It just, anyone you speak to, it just isn't. And it's also out of character with the existing community.
Could I respond?
So can I go through them and then, okay, then you can put them all together?
Yep.
So the platting is not consistent with Hamlet 2 zoning. So it's half acre, but it's 1 to 2 family houses. But the comprehensive plan specifically calls out for the future housing development in this area to be consistent with the historical building patterns of the village, varying lot sizes and densities. And granted, there are steep slopes, so that's what's gonna dictate what happens here. You wanna also keep as much of nature as possible, so that dictates what happens. But most of the village is constructed on sloping land, so there are ways to engineer your way through that. And the current design appears to be more driven by a cookie cutter uniformity rather than the historical patterns which the comprehensive plan calls for. So again, this is another area that's out of character with the existing community. The third thing, the intent of both the comprehensive plan and the zoning was to allow for the accommodation of affordable housing. Now, 20 years later, the affordable housing idea has become a crisis. This particular parcel is at a huge financial advantage because of the extraordinary circumstance of being able to hook up to existing water and sewer. That very rarely happens in Columbia County. So, and that's a huge advantage. You don't have to go to the expense of septics and wells, but none of the units are being planned in an affordable range for Philmont residents. So that's a third factor that's out of the character with the existing community. Four, there is this exceptional amenity of having a lake within the village boundary. So there's been a lot of discussion tonight about how to get the pathways to that lake, but it's almost like you're ignoring it. There should be a very clear public way to get to the south shore of the lake. And I still don't quite see it. You're struggling with it. Hopefully you'll get there, but maybe considering a kayak launch, a fishing pier, I mean, something that works with the village. There's other monies available that are going on right now with the LRAP. So, working with those groups to really make it more of a public place. And five, the comprehensive plan specifically calls out for newly developed roads to meet the standards of existing roads in the village. The proposed loop road clearly does not do this. As a narrow one-way, it will attract speeding. It'll be dangerous for bicyclists and pedestrians. It'll be awkward for drop-off and deliveries, and it will provide no parking. I just cannot see how the village could take on the maintenance and the liability issues of this substandard road. I think that's a really big issue that needs to get addressed. So it's this fighting of a private enclave benefiting from public facilities. And it is a struggle, but I think you could do a little bit better. But under the seeker, though, being out of character with the existing neighborhood is an issue that we up here have to make the decision on the approvals. So we need to be sure that we're covered. If maybe this is the right solution, but we need to be absolutely certain that we're covered, so we don't have people in Philmont that are now on roads and saying, oh, you let them get that narrow road. We want to make our road narrower so our lawns get bigger. I mean, you have to understand, you know, what we up here have, when we make this approval, what we're doing. So we will need some very strong justifications for this private-public matter.
I'm curious, is there anything I can do? Like, would you like to meet separately so I can get you up to speed from the two previous submissions that we've made?
That might be a good idea, because there might be, right, I'm coming in late.
Yeah.
So that might be a very good idea.
I'd be happy to do that, if that would be helpful. I know we've submitted the materials for the record, but sometimes just reading through it isn't as helpful as going over.
Okay, all right, yeah. So, why don't we do that?
So I would like to speak to a few of those points. So about the connectivity, I understand what you're saying about having roads connecting through. I guess my opinion is that roads increase traffic. And there is a new approach to urban planning called new urbanisms. And one of the things that they really highlight are walkable communities. And, you know, house number 5 can visit their friends up on Overlook Court by taking the walking path that we've included through to Chestnut Court. And we were really focused on that type of connectivity. We were putting the environmental sensitivity of the lot and the strong concerns that we were hearing from the public about the environmental sensitivity, as well as our own desires, as the guiding principles in how we approach this. So the density is something that, yes, we are not doing half acre zoning. We are doing roughly 50% of that. And that had everything to do with trying to maintain the woods-like character that is there. That lake area is a sensitive area in terms of species, et cetera. And so the more wooded this neighborhood feels, the more likely that those natural resources that are utilizing the lakefront will continue to utilize the lakefront. So that was why we decided not to do the allowable density. Doing a greater density would definitely benefit us financially. So for that was, you know, we're leaving money on the table, so to speak, by holding back on the density. Uniformity you were talking about, like we have varying lot sizes, not greatly varying, but I don't feel that it's out of character with the rest of the village, as where there are sections of village will have 4 or 5 houses densely packed together. Even on Summit Street, there's multiple examples, and then there will be a big lot with a house set back in a different type of scenario. So I wouldn't say I would agree that we're a big departure from density patterns that are present in the village. You brought up affordable housing. That was really like a cost versus, that was really a density issue for us. My limited understanding of affordable housing, and I've actually put a lot of research into it, but it's a complicated world, so I wouldn't assume that I know everything about it, but affordable housing really requires density. For us to create affordable housing on this lot is completely adverse to both our driving forces and most of the strong feedback that we got from those public presentations that we made, because we would definitely be grading more and clearing more to try to fit more housing into this area. It would also require us probably to get variances. Right now the village has restrictions about minimum house size and stuff like that. And we were really interested in doing a process that didn't require lots of variances. Knowing that this would be a potentially contentious process here in the village, we wanted to try to do things as of right. The lake connection that you brought up, I would love to make a path down to a dock. We do not have the right to do things in the conservation area. We can only affect the land that we own. If the village wants to do that, I applaud it. We could probably support the village with that in the sense that we will have equipment there. We will be clearing, grading, making paths. That is something I'd be really happy to discuss with the village. I don't see that it would necessarily be a part of our submission. It would be a separate process. The village would have to figure that out in a more inclusive, comprehensive way, since everyone in the village kind of owns that land. Existing road, the road loop that you were talking about, we're not asking for any variance on the road loop. The road is a one-way road, so we've simply reduced just the second lane. We still have the same shoulder requirements on both sides, the culvert requirements. We are still providing a road that does conform to the village's specification. You could speak to that maybe better than I can, but that is my understanding, is that we're not asking for any special variance on the road.
And if I can just add, as far as the road being one way and narrower, part of that is to respect the natural environment as well. It is a steeply sloping site. And if we had, a 24 foot wide road with the 3-on-1 side slopes, you end up having to clear and grade and cut a much wider area. And so this allows us to keep the clearing footprint and grading footprint as small as possible while still providing good circulation at the site. And our earlier comments, so the visual assessment was we were trying to limit the amount of tree clearing that needs to be done so that we're preserving the viewshed as much as possible. So it's one of those things, it's a trade-off. And we look at the standard specification and we say, can we get some leniency on this specification so that we can reduce the impact and hopefully have a more visually appealing project.
But if you did one road instead of a loop, the impervious area would be possibly less. I mean, it would probably be the same.
It would be the same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So that's not an argument then. That you were
trying to
clear less. It would be the same if you did one road.
No, actually, we do have to clear less because of the slope on the site.
You have to grade out
more. So to make a broader road, you have to cut deeper, which is a deeper back cut, and then grade
more
longer
film.
On the other side.
Yeah.
So by breaking it into two pieces, we're able to minimize the area of grading.
Okay. You have a section through that as well?
The section actually does illustrate.
Yeah.
Oh, it shows it. Okay, great. Yeah. I would love to get a copy of that.
And, by having this long oval loop, which is an unusual road configuration, I will admit that, but that provides an opportunity to maintain the woods within the loop, which provides the screening for the uphill houses. So if the road ran through the center here and we just had a wide clearing, it's more likely you'd be able to see the houses on the uphill side because you'd be removing all the trees downhill from them. So we can certainly get you a copy of that cross-section.
You'll have to have then speed bumps because people love to speed on one-way roads.
I think this is where I could help just get you caught up on the road grades because the topography, if you've been on the site, is very undulating. So it's not like a flat oval, like a racetrack. It's on two levels, and it is also rising and falling. So it's got both horizontal curves and vertical curves. And so that combination is going to slow people down just because you can't, you're not able to see a half a mile ahead of you.
Are you familiar with Dunbar Road?
In Austerlitz?
No, right here.
No, I can't say I've driven down Dunbar.
They have a real bad issue with that. Speeding, and it undulates, and does this.
We're not on Dunbar Road.
So.
Okay.
I don't know, I'm not sure what the solution is, but.
Okay, thank you.
Well, the roads itself are gonna be built according to Pullman law, you know.
As far as the base and section, yes, sir.
Yeah. Anything else, Tom?
No, my issues are that there are some of the measures right now, to me, look like it's spelling out private enclave.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can help me understand how that's not going on, how will the public be invited into this space? Would
well,
be very helpful.
The trail networks right now to get into the park. You have to go all the way up to, at the very least, Overlook Court,
mm-hmm.
and then walk down and through private property. And that trail system is being unofficially maintained, I think both through a kind of a combination of private residents and village support. We will be creating a system that is, we will grade it so that it is easily traversable, and then it will be mowed by the village the way it is mowed currently. So we're encouraging a walking community and.
Okay, were you considering an HOA so that you could maintain that yourself?
No, we were looking at how it was being maintained now and just trying to create a more official version of what's unofficially happening right
uh-huh.
now. The other thing is we would like the village to be able to, make improvements to that according to their desires. Like if the village wanted to come in later and say like, oh, these paths should be, paved paths or something like that, that it's not our HOA controlling private or public access into public lands.
So you're gonna get with Brandy?
I can
be available.
Okay. No other questions? What's the next step, Ron?
Well, we want to do the lead agency designation.
Sure.
Because we've had the time.
Yeah.
The time's passed.
Yeah.
When we reviewed the secret forms and we've had technical comment, we've had responses, we're at the point where we had the applicant actually go out and notice all potentially interested and involved agencies. And they get 30 days to tell us, no, we want to be the lead agency for environmental, or here's our comments, and we're past that point. So you as a board now to initiate the secret process is ready to make a motion to declare yourself lead agency for purposes of secret over the project. If you're ready to do that.
All right, I need a motion.
I'll make a motion.
I'll second it. I got a motion and a second to make us the lead agency.
And then I guess the next step is if the board believes the submissions are complete to date. I mean, there's some additional information that Mr. Pano has requested that they will bring and provide. If you deem it complete and we have public that want to comment, we can move forward to set a public hearing. Not necessarily a one and done type public hearing. It will be an opportunity to collect comments on potential environmental issues and the actual project issues. So if you believe you're satisfied, we can make a motion to deem the application complete for purposes of scheduling public hearing.
First, let me just get a vote on the lead agency. I don't want there to be any
sure.
hair. All right, all in favor of the board being a lead agency?
Aye.
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 Opposed?
I'm sorry, who was it that seconded that motion?
Rick.
Okay.
All right, now I need a motion to move forward with the public hearing.
I make a motion.
I'll second it.
All in favor?
Was that Rich?
Aye.
Aye.
Yes, Rich.
Yep. Aye.
Aye.
Okay.
So it'll be at our next regular meeting.
It will be.
We'll commence it. And that's going to be just to get the date out there.
And that was to accept it, a complete application.
Deem the application complete and move forward with public hearing.
So that would be what, April 19th?
Yes, April 19th, starting at 7 p.m. here.
Okay.
George, did you have any other technical comments that you needed to advance now, or?
No.
You're all set.
Just done.
And Brandy, you're gonna submit your digital renderings and, or you're gonna bring something to present that?
Oh, we'll have to bring it, because it's a very, very large file. And if we're presenting it, would you all want to sit, like, facing that screen, and we could use that screen? Or do you want me to bring a separate screen to set up, maybe on that wall, and project it from where George and?
Oh, we have a screen.
Yep.
Yeah, I was just noticing that, so, but I'm happy to bring a screen and set it up if that's better for you guys to, like, have something over where the police.
I don't think that screen's ever been down as long as I've been here.
Oh, really?
20 years.
No, we might wanna.
I'll bring my own screen.
Did it work? You're the only ones I've ever heard of.
So in other words, that's just a prop?
No, it works, it works. When we did the.
We're big shots. So I guess if you could bring a screen, that would be.
We'll make sure we're fully, yeah. Thank you.
Will the visual assessment be up on the village website?
If I haven't provided it already, we'll do that right away. I thought we provided it, I'll double check.
Do you have something that you can put on the website or send me that I can get out on the elevation to?
Sure, I think we provided this as well, but if we didn't, I'll make sure that that gets there as well. Because that has the plan and then this section in addition to the renderings that we provided tonight.
Yeah, because I don't know that I've seen the elevation.
Okay.
I think that might be in your small packet there.
In this?
It's not in the tiny packet, no.
Oh, it's not, oh, sorry, okay.
These are just copies of this.
And just to point out, when you do get it, the tiny little gray dash over here on the left, that's a person standing on the, on Lake Drive, and the sight lines are.
Okay.
A 6-foot tall.
Coming out of that.
Okay, be interesting to see.
Thank you so much for your time this evening.
All right, thank you, you guys have been great.
Thanks.
All right.
I make a motion to adjourn.
All in favor?
Aye.
Who sent me that?
Honestly, I don't know.
Did you get?
Rich or Rick, good night, Thelma.
Yeah, one.